If you love Snapped, Women Who Murder, you're going to love listening to true crime or mystery titles on Audible. The audio title I'm diving into again is one of my favorites to revisit, Mindhunter by John Douglas and Mark Ulshaker. Even if you think you know the details of the cases, former FBI unit chief John Douglas took on from documentaries or the scripted show, the audio title goes above and beyond in bringing you along with him in his career, trying to catch serial killers and serial perpetrators. He used psychological profiling to dive into the minds of notorious criminals. The title includes his hunt for a killer in Alaska, the Green River Killer, and so much more. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. It is the home of storytelling, after all. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/snapped or text snapped to 500-500. That's audible.com/snapped or text snapped to 500-500.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Hi, Snap listeners. We are bringing you a special bonus episode today from Oxygen True Crime's hit series, Killer Couples, airing on Oxygen True Crime on Sundays at 6/5 Central. You can also watch full episodes live or on demand on the free Oxygen app by clicking the link in our description. Enjoy.
Before her name made international headlines, Nancy Pfister was the toast of her ritzy mountain oasis.
Everybody wanted to be like Nancy. Everybody wanted to meet her. She didn't have a problem in the world.
She was briefly engaged to Michael Douglas. When the Kennedys would come into town, she would party with them.
In Aspen, she was the queen, for sure.
But a harrowing crime would send shockwaves through the glamorous Aspen community.
Ma'am, tell me exactly what happened.
I got my thing in the closet.
The body was completely wrapped in garbage bags. They see blonde hair and they notice, obviously, that it's a female.
The investigation would capture media attention around the nation.
Everybody was shocked at this gruesome murder here of a very well-loved local woman who had everything going for her.
As police search for answers, they'll uncover a desperate conspiracy, one that culminates in a tell-all confession that would leave those closest to the case shaken to their core.
She is the most self-loathing person that I've ever met.
That was just another indication to me that they were being framed.
She screwed us up big time.
They bonded over their mutual, I have to say, hatred. And what desperate people do sometimes is lash out.
Known as the Beverly Hills of the Rocky Mountains, Aspen, Colorado is the winter retreat for the rich and famous.
Aspen is a playground for billionaires. You can get a beautiful house here. You can land your jet within 5 minutes of downtown. The skiing is 100% world class.
But on the evening of February 26th, 2014, the glitz and glamour of the Aspen community would dissolve into chaos when local police dispatchers receive a frantic 911 call.
Oh my God.
911, what is the address of the emergency?
Help me. Oh my God.
Ma'am, tell me exactly what happened.
Okay. My friend had it. I got my friend in the closet. He's dead!
What is your name, ma'am?
I'm Jackie Carpenter.
Okay, is your friend a male or a female?
Female. Nancy Pfister!
Born in 1956, Nancy Pfister was brought up in an exclusive community.
Nancy is the daughter of Art Pfister. Art Pfister was a rancher that owned the property that was eventually developed into the Buttermilk ski area and the West Buttermilk super exclusive housing developments.
The Pfisters were like Aspen royalty. Everyone catered to them because they basically helped put Aspen on the map.
If her parents were royalty, Nancy was Aspen's princess.
She was like Aspen's daughter. The kid that grew up, that had everything. Everybody wanted to be like Nancy. Everybody wanted to meet her. She didn't have a problem in the world.
She was Aspen's welcome wagon. She was very friendly and outgoing and gregarious. She was briefly engaged to Michael Douglas. She was a girlfriend to Jack Nicholson. When the Kennedys would come into town, she would party with them.
You would see Nancy in town, and she was the sparkle. I mean, you knew that if you followed along with her, you were going to find some fun. Believe me, there was going to be some Prosecco. There was always someone to meet and someone to have fun with. She had the charm and the magic, and like the Pied Piper, you just followed her.
By the early 2000s, one of Nancy's closest followers was her best friend and personal assistant, Kathy Carpenter.
Kathy Carpenter was a bank teller at Alpine Bank in Aspen. This was the bank that Nancy Pfister banked at. Nancy Pfister, at one point, invited Kathy Carpenter to become her personal assistant.
Kathy Carpenter really cared about Nancy Pfister. She became her person, like, to drive her different places. And I think she enjoyed it because she got invited around to places and things that she probably would not have gotten invited to had she not been with Nancy Pfister.
As a personal assistant, Kathy's biggest job was helping Nancy manage the rental of her luxurious chalet.
She would rent out her home on Buttermilk Mountain when she would leave town during the winter. She was traveling all over the world.
In November 2013, the 57-year-old socialite chose Australia for a six-month getaway.
Nancy Pfister wanted to go to Australia not only to get out of the cold weather of Aspen in the winter, but she was an adventurous woman, and she was thinking of potentially buying some property in Australia.
Nancy had told friends she'd be returning in May of 2014. But on February 26th, 3 months before Nancy's anticipated arrival, police get an alarming call from Kathy Carpenter, who tells them she's just found Nancy's body inside her Aspen home.
Okay, is she breathing?
She's dead, full of blood, wrapped in a string.
Kathy Carpenter was screaming into the 911 dispatch officer, my friend is dead, my friend is dead.
Ma'am, stay on the line with me. I'm gonna have some additional questions for you, okay?
Okay,
are you with your friend now?
No, I left the house. I ran out of the house.
Kathy is frantic and screaming. She had just found her friend dead and didn't want to go back in the house. So she actually got in her car and starts driving down the mountain.
Where are you?
I'm driving to town. I'm going to the police department. It's not me.
Are you in a car?
Yes.
Okay, I want you to pull over and put your flashers on.
When deputies arrive, they realize Kathy is in serious distress.
She was so distraught that they had to use a sedative to calm her down.
While Kathy is being treated, deputies race to Nancy Pfister's house to investigate her claims.
Responding deputies go into the house, and in the call, they had been directed to the closet in this house. So they go to the closet. He opens the door. He's not immediately seeing a body. He takes a look on the floor at this pile of laundry. It looks like sheets on the floor. And he bends down and he pulls a sheet back and he sees a bit of shoulder. He reaches down, checks for signs of life. Having found none, he retreats and the death investigation turns into a murder investigation.
Coming up, as investigators dig deeper into their victim's life, unsavory secrets come to light.
He sent Nancy Pfister an email saying, "Be careful what you wish for. You may get more than you expect."
It's always interesting when someone is saying very openly how much they don't like the deceased.
In Aspen, Colorado, investigators believe they have just found the body of 57-year-old socialite Nancy Pfister inside her bedroom closet.
The body was completely wrapped in garbage bags. So as detectives remove the plastic from the body, they see blonde hair and they notice, obviously, that it's a female. And so at that point, they're pretty sure that it's Nancy Pfister.
That trash bag around the head ended up concealing the actual cause of death. And that was blunt force trauma to the head.
But something about the crime scene doesn't add up for investigators.
There was a smear of blood that was noticed on the headboard of the bed in the master bedroom. There was some droplets of blood, maybe spray on the bedroom wall, but not substantial amounts of blood that you would think based upon the head injuries that we were seeing on the body of Nancy Pfister.
As detectives take a closer look at Nancy's bed, they make a telling discovery.
There was an area of a sizable amount of blood on the underside of the mattress. So we know our killer took the time and they worked to conceal what had actually happened.
Based on the blood evidence, investigators believe Nancy had been attacked while she slept. As they continue processing the scene, they find little evidence to suggest a motive.
They weren't seeing a ransacked bedroom where somebody was going through drawers and dumping drawers and looking for jewelry and things like that. There was no evidence of that.
While Nancy Pfister's body is transported to the medical examiner's office for autopsy, investigators circle back to Nancy's friend and the woman who called 911, Kathy Carpenter, for more information.
Once Kathy calms down, she meets with investigators at the police department and they ask her to walk them through the crime scene and how she came to find Nancy's body. And she tells them that Nancy just returned from Australia a few days before.
She had to go over to the house to check on the dog, Gabe, and she knew that Nancy Pfister would be sleeping because, you know, she'd be jet-lagged.
When Kathy arrived, she noticed the dog hadn't been fed and had gone to the bathroom inside Nancy's house multiple times.
It's obvious that something is wrong. She goes up the stairs and she sees what looks like bloodstains on the headboard. She looks to the closet and she noticed that the key that she had left in it was gone.
She went and grabbed her spare set of keys to Nancy's house and she unlocked the closet door. And at that point, she says she saw a figure in the corner wrapped in garbage bags. Looks a little bit closer and sees that it's in fact a body.
That's when Kathy drops a bombshell. She believes she knows who killed her best friend, the couple who had been renting Nancy Pfister's home while she was in Australia, Trey and Nancy Styler.
Trey Styler was a young resident in 1980 at the very prestigious University of Colorado Hospital in Denver when he met Nancy Styler. She was a nurse anesthetist at the time. She was very wowed and impressed by Trace Dyler's intelligence. He, in turn, was surprised at someone with her looks.
The pair eventually married and had a son. For the next 30 years, Trey's career and their fortunes continued to rise.
He finally became chief of anesthesiology at St. Joseph's Hospital in Denver, which is another quite acclaimed hospital. They were living in a suburb of Denver called Greenwood Village, which is a quite affluent suburb in a very large house.
But things took a turn for the worse when Trey's health began to deteriorate in his early 60s, and he was diagnosed with a degenerative nerve condition called Charcot-Marie-Tooth disease.
He was not able to stand for long periods of time and had to use a wheelchair at other times.
He could hardly walk down the stairs. I don't know how he was functioning. He was either in so much pain or he was so sick, he could barely do anything.
Because of his health condition, Trey was no longer able to practice medicine, and the couple had to look for new avenues to make money.
Nancy wanted to get into the skincare thing because being a nurse, she could do Botox and she could do treatments that were expensive. So that would be an opportunity for her to make a lot of money.
So they had this idea to go up to Aspen. They knew that that's where the money was, and that's where they wanted to start the spa business.
The Styler story won Nancy Pfister over.
Nancy Pfister and the Stylers worked out an agreement where the Stylers would rent her house for 6 months. The Stylers would pay her $12,000, $6,000 up front, and then $6,000 when they moved in as part of that agreement.
When they met, they were buddies. You know, Nancy Pfister would take her to the hot springs and, oh, I'm going to introduce you to my wealthy friends in Aspen so that you'll have, you know, professional contacts.
Nancy also invited the Stylers to move in early so she could help them settle in before she left for her trip.
When they moved into Nancy Pfister's house, Nancy Pfister was still there. She hadn't left yet to Australia. So they lived with her for about 2 or 3 weeks before she took off.
In November 2013, Nancy Pfister left for Australia. But it wasn't long after that her relationship and rental agreement with the Stylers quickly began to unravel. 8 weeks after she left the country, Nancy Pfister had emailed Kathy Carpenter from Australia and claimed that the Stylers still owed her thousands of dollars in rent.
Trey Styler and Nancy Pfister were on Facebook together. They were friends. And she started posting really negative things on Facebook, and Trey was seeing this. And this is when Nancy Styler really became angry, because she was ruining their reputation, basically, and their prospects of being able to meet new people, get new clients, because Nancy Pfister was very influential.
She was sending them group emails. Kathy Carpenter was CC'd. Everybody was on this email. Help me, do something with these people. Get them out of there. Get me my money, anything, do something. And it was an ongoing theme. I heard less about her happiness there than I did about her anger about not getting the money.
Kathy tells police that by mid-February, Nancy Pfister decided to fly home from Australia 3 months early to take care of the issue in person.
Nancy Pfister told the Stylers that she would be back in Aspen in a few days and to get all of their belongings out.
Once Nancy got back to town, the Stylers moved out of her house and rented a hotel room in Basalt, which is down valley from Aspen. They moved some of their belongings out of her house, but there were still hundreds of thousands of dollars of equipment still left in the house that they were going to use to build their spa that Nancy refused to give back to them until they paid her the money she said they owed her.
Nancy Pfister says, you owe me $14,000. You damaged my furniture. You did other things around my house. I'm not going to give you back your equipment, this expensive equipment that Nancy Stiler had for in her spa business, unless you hand over $14,000. I mean, they didn't have anything approaching $14,000. That's what Trey basically told Kathy Carpenter. We can't come up with this money. He was already angry. His wife was already angry, very angry with Nancy Pfister.
Trey Stiler at one point sent Nancy Pfister an email saying, "Be careful what you wish for. You may get more than you expect."
This episode is brought to you in part by June's Journey. Picture it, the glamour of the roaring 20s wrapped in a mystery that only you can solve. Dive into June Parker's captivating quest to uncover scandalous family secrets. With your keen eye for detail, find hidden clues and solve mind-boggling puzzles. It's all about observation, intrigue, and drama. But beware. Each clue leads deeper into a thrilling storyline filled with danger and romance. June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
The mountain town of Aspen, Colorado is reeling after police find 57-year-old Nancy Pfister dead from an apparent homicide.
Who in their wildest dream would think something like this would happen? Especially to somebody like Nancy Pfister. She doesn't have an enemy in the world.
Nancy's best friend, Kathy Carpenter, has implicated the late socialite's former friends and tenants, 65-year-old Trey Stiler and his 62-year-old wife, Nancy, as her possible killers.
Within about 12 hours of finding Nancy Pfister's body, police went to the hotel in Basalt, where Kathy said the Stilers were staying.
They asked them to come in and answer some questions.
At the station, when investigators confront Nancy about her and her husband's feud with Nancy Pfister, she doesn't deny it. Instead, she tells police that Nancy Pfister had been a demanding landlord since the moment they moved into her home.
Nancy Stiler told police that initially the relationship between the couple and Nancy Pfister, they became fast friends, but once the Stilers signed the lease on her house, the relationship quickly changed and went downhill.
And for 2 days, she was good. Until she got our money. And the deal was kind of, you know, sealed.
Right.
And then she treated me like a slave.
Nancy Pfister would say things like, "Bring me my champagne, darling," or "Rub my feet, darling," or "Rub my neck, darling," and she would say this to both Nancy Stiler and Trey Stiler. And Nancy Stiler also said that Nancy Pfister would walk around the house nude in front of her husband, and that didn't sit well. So Trey Stiler told his wife, "Just be patient. She's going to be leaving in a few weeks. We can put up with her for a little bit longer." But you could tell it was getting to Nancy Stiler.
She was very forthcoming in her dislike for Nancy Pfister. Now, hating someone doesn't mean you kill them, but it's always interesting when law enforcement talks to someone and that someone is saying very openly how much they don't like the deceased.
When detectives press Nancy Stiler about their whereabouts the past week, she claims she and her husband hadn't seen Nancy Pfister since she returned from Australia.
Nancy Stiler said that the last time they'd been to Nancy Pfister's house was to move their belongings out because they didn't want to see Nancy Pfister once she returned from her trip. Once Nancy returned from her trip, they didn't have access to the house, so they couldn't have been there. when Nancy Pfister was killed.
In another interrogation room, Trey Styler echoes his wife's alibi.
She had screwed us up big time and made the situation uncomfortable.
Mr. Styler had run into some severe difficulties in his life, career-wise, financially. I don't think Nancy brought in much money, as I recall. They ended up in pretty dire financial straits, and they were trying to rebuild their life up here.
Do you feel bad about that she's dead?
A little.
Sensing their suspicions, Trey quickly points out his physical ailments to police.
My condition is such that I don't think I could be a kid.
He had to leave his medical profession because he could no longer physically meet the demands of his job in the operating room by standing. By this point, law enforcement knows, whoever this killer was flipped a big, bulky, heavy, king-size mattress. Whoever the killer or killers was moved a body. They're thinking there needs to be some strength there, some stature there. That's kind of hard to do on your own. So Trey and Nancy Styler, no evidence to hold them, no evidence they had committed any type of crime. They're released and they go back down to Basalt to their motel room where they sit. We had had a deputy sitting watching that room.
The following day, police receive a call from a sanitation worker in Basalt who believes he has just made a crucial discovery.
That Friday, one of the workers whose job was to pick up the recyclable material went into one of these dumpsters where the material was, and there are very strict rules that you cannot put personal trash in there. He saw a bag that appeared to be personal trash. He was annoyed. He opened it up.
What was remarkable about that trash bag is in it had prescription medication bottles with the name of Nancy Pfister. In this small valley, in this small community, the gentleman that checked on that immediately knew he had come across something that might be of interest to law enforcement.
When investigators arrive, they collect several more valuable pieces of evidence.
A document that was of extreme interest that was found in this trash bag was a vehicle registration belonging to none other than William Trey Styler and his vehicle. And then we found a bloody hammer.
This was the first evidentiary connection between one of the Stylers and a piece of evidence in the murder itself.
The evidence is a huge break for investigators, especially when they realize where it was found.
Maybe 200 yards from a certain hotel that was of interest to law enforcement. Because that hotel, this modest hotel in Basalt, Colorado, contained Trey and Nancy Styler.
While investigators are waiting for forensic results, the hotel's owner makes another key discovery outside the Styler's room.
Does a morning check, checking to see just if everything's all right, if anything needs to be tidied up. In a matter of a few feet from the motel room door of Trey and Nancy Styler, it's a key, and on that key, it had a tag, and on that tag, it was written owner's closet. It's the key to the closet where Nancy Pfister's body was found.
The discovery is a game changer. And when the DNA results on the potential murder weapon come back from the crime lab, the case against the Stylers is seemingly solidified.
The blood on the hammer, through DNA testing, proved to be connected to Trey Styler. Both the physical evidence, which had come out of that bag, and Kathy Carpenter's statements about all the conflict that was going on led the police to feel that they had probable cause to make an arrest.
Coming up, as investigators build their case, a shocking revelation suggests the Stylers might not be the real killers after all.
Now we're having discussions. Did the Stylers really do this? Are the Stylers being set up?
That was just another indication to me that the Stylers are being framed.
In Aspen, Colorado, authorities have arrested married couple Trey and Nancy Styler for the murder of their former friend and local celebrity, Nancy Pfister. News of the arrest stuns the close-knit community.
I couldn't believe it. When I was there, they were all having fun together, laughing, joking, hugging each other, toasting a drink. I was shocked when I first heard it.
As investigators continue building their case against the Stylers, they struggle to comprehend the killer's carelessness with the evidence.
It just raises this fundamental question. If that's a key piece of evidence that would tie you into a murder, why would you leave it 20 steps away from the door of where you're staying at the motel?
Now we're having discussions. Did the Stylers really do this? Are the Stylers being set up?
Investigators start looking at the possibility that the Stylers are being framed, or that someone else may be in on it and is planting evidence to pin the murder exclusively on Nancy and Trey. But who would have the motive and the opportunity?
One of the crucial pieces of evidence was that there was a key to the closet that was found very close to the Stylers motel room.
This was the key to the owner's closet that was missing.
But when it was tested, they were looking to see who had touched that key. It was Kathy Carpenter who had some forensic type evidence on that key. She had obviously access to that key. That was the biggest fact that made me start to think that maybe the Stylers were being framed by Kathy Carpenter.
Investigators decide to revisit Kathy's statements to police. They begin by examining her 911 call.
Kathy said in her 911 call that there was blood all over the body and that when she opened the closet door, she was able to see that it was Nancy Pfister.
Okay, is she breathing?
She's dead, full of blood, wrapped in a thing.
Okay, ma'am, can you get near your friend?
No, I can't. She's full of blood.
The problem with that was that investigators, when they arrived on scene, couldn't see any blood on the body and, in fact, had to unwrap the body from the garbage bags and the sheets in order to see any blood at all.
If you took a look at the crime scene photos, you couldn't tell if it was a man, if it was a woman. All you could see was a little bit of white skin, and you saw sheets. Her head had been concealed, actually sealed up in another trash bag. There was nothing to indicate any identity of this person.
Detectives realize Kathy had also been quick to push suspicion toward the Stylers when she was interviewed by police.
Kathy Carpenter immediately mentioned the Stylers. The Stylers were delivered to us on this platter of people that we should be interested in.
Investigators speak with Nancy Pfister's friends to discuss her relationship with Kathy Carpenter. They learn Kathy had become increasingly bitter about her 7-year friendship with Nancy Pfister.
Nancy Pfister always wanted to be a little bit above these people that she had around her. They didn't seem to be relationships of equals. So there was some indication that maybe Nancy Pfister didn't always treat her that well, and there was some animosity.
One time, we're sitting on the sofa chatting, and she said, Kathy, she screamed for Kathy, who was downstairs, and said, we ran out of Prosecco. go get us some more Prosecco. We ran out. And all of a sudden, you hear a car peeling out of that gravel driveway as fast as it could. Kathy was angry. She was tired of being pushed around, but she was pushed around an awful lot. Get me this, get me that.
Friends also reveal that Kathy had become close with the Stylers while Nancy was traveling overseas.
Part of Kathy's job was to take care of Nancy Pfister's house. So she was over there all the time. And while she was over there, she got to know the Stylers and started spending some personal time with them.
They got to know each other and they got to share their grievances about Nancy Pfister.
Investigators began hearing more and more stories about the Stylers and Kathy Carpenter hanging around town and openly bad-mouthing Nancy Pfister.
On March 1st, police decide to bring Kathy in for another round of questioning. They press her about the inconsistencies in her 911 call and previous statements.
Kathy Carpenter, her interview with us sticks to, hey, I knew that was my friend. How did you know that was your friend? Is what we ask her as law enforcement investigators. And at one point in the interview, she actually reaches up to her own head and she said, it's the hair, it's the hair. And she starts stroking. I recognized her blonde hair. There was no hair free flowing from underneath this sealed bag that was actually literally tied around the neck of Nancy Pfister.
Still, Kathy refuses to implicate herself.
It's time. Unburden your heart. Let's talk about the truth. Let's talk about what happened. It's time, Kathy. You can't keep...
I didn't do it. I don't know what to say. I was not in cahoots. I do not know what to say.
In cahoots.
With the Stylers.
Despite her claims of innocence, authorities believe they have enough circumstantial evidence against Kathy. 11 days after the Stylers were taken into custody, Kathy Carpenter is the third person arrested and charged with Nancy Pfister's murder.
When she got arrested with the Stylers, I was really surprised that she was involved.
When I first heard about it, I couldn't believe it. Like, holy moly, what the hell did Kathy do?
Coming up, an unexpected confession threatens to upend the case, leading to more questions, theories, and doubts about what really happened to Nancy Pfister.
This was a resolution that was distasteful and disgusting to me as a cop.
It was so shocking that they could lie to that extent.
In the winter of 2014, law enforcement in Aspen, Colorado, have indicted three people for the murder of celebrated socialite Nancy Pfister, her former close friends and tenants, Nancy and Trey Styler, and her longtime assistant and friend, Kathy Carpenter. As the first preliminary hearing approaches, prosecutors solidify their theory for motive.
Kathy Carpenter being a follower, needing somebody to show her attention, she found that in the Stylers. And they bonded over their mutual hatred of Nancy Pfister. We believe that the Stylers were the driving force. Stylers lost everything. They had nowhere to go. They were desperate. They were lost. They just didn't know what to do. And what desperate people do sometimes is lash out.
Then, 1 week before the preliminary hearing is scheduled, Trey Styler makes an unexpected plea.
Trey Styler contacts through his lawyer the prosecution team and says, I wanna talk to you. So they bring him in. They bring him in his wheelchair. And he tells them, I did this. I did it all by myself.
According to Trey Styler, on the morning of February 25th, he went to Nancy Pfister's house to try and talk with her about the escalating drama.
Trey admits to police that he still had a key to the house, so he lets himself in.
He goes up the stairs. He doesn't hear anything there. He goes into Nancy Pfister's bedroom. He walks in the door. He sees her sleeping in her bed. She has on her eye mask and her earplugs, which is what she was known for. And she's just lying there in front of him.
He said he saw her there sleeping, and he just felt this rage, and he crushed her head with a hammer.
After Trey was sure Nancy Pfister was dead, he tells investigators how he cleaned up his crime.
He said he and he alone moved her body to the floor. He said he and he alone dragged her body to the closet, wrapped her in sheets. He said he and he alone flipped the mattress.
Investigators heard his story, but they weren't buying it. They did not believe that he could have acted on his own.
He was always in a wheelchair. So it was always a question of how much could he actually move, stand, you know, lift. And when asked about committing that crime, he just said, well, I can only attribute it to the adrenaline effect.
In exchange for his cooperation, Trey asks authorities to drop the charges against his wife, Nancy, and Kathy Carpenter.
I sat in that interview room just not believing Trey Styler. He was throwing himself on the sword. He was taking the rap so Nancy could go free. He was also telling us Kathy Carpenter had no involvement in this at all.
From my review of the evidence, I just didn't see anything that suggested that Nancy Styler had anything to do with it.
Without any physical evidence to disprove his story, authorities know they won't have a foolproof case against Nancy Styler or Kathy Carpenter.
After Trey Styler had confessed to the murder, Nancy Styler and Kathy Carpenter were basically let off. Now, Nancy Styler was let off with prejudice, which means that she could never be charged with the case again. Kathy Carpenter, on the other hand, was released without prejudice, in legal terms meaning that she was still under the umbrella of suspicion.
On June 20th, 2014, Trey Styler pleads guilty to second-degree murder inside a packed Aspen courtroom. He's sentenced to 20 years in prison. While justice is served in the case against Trey Styler, not everyone agrees with the district attorney's decision.
I would not have signed on to participate in the arrest of Trey and Nancy Styler if I didn't believe both were part of committing the murder of Nancy Pfister. I wholeheartedly believed when I signed on to participate in the arrest and be part of it that Kathy Carpenter was involved in the murder of Nancy Pfister. This was a resolution that was distasteful and disgusting to me as a cop, but at least we were holding someone accountable. Everybody could have gone free.
Following his incarceration, Trey Styler agrees to sit down with a book author and describes how he committed the murder despite his medical condition.
I still had some of her body strength.
And
my lower body from the waist down, I was shot.
In his interview, Trey also reiterates his wife's innocence.
The idea of her doing such a thing or being involved in such a thing is so insane to me. When they arrested her, that destroyed me.
In August 2015, barely a year after his guilty plea, Trey kills himself in his prison cell.
He hung himself in his cell, hung himself to death.
He took the easy way out, and I'd rather see him rot in prison. You know, he should suffer.
As for Nancy Styler and Kathy Carpenter, they both still vehemently maintain their innocence.
In my heart, I did not believe she had anything to do with this murder. Nancy loved her husband. It completely blew her mind that this man that she was married to was capable of this kind of an act.
Today, there's still a strong feeling in the Aspen community that the case may never be fully resolved.
In the aftermath of the crime, there was a lot of anger in Aspen among people we interviewed, among people we talked to, who absolutely felt that justice had not been done for Nancy Pfister.
The town of Aspen loved Nancy Pfister. Okay? She was iconic. She lived her life the way she wanted to live it. She had fun. And she had fun a lot. And she shared her good fortune and her friendship with all of her friends. She was too young to pass. She had too much life left in her. I would just pray to God it never happens to anyone else again.
I feel like I was blindsided.
Because it's a competition show.
From the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor.
We have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
Nobody has dared to find out who is the actual best at just being on a reality show. I'm your host, comedian Daniel Tosh.
Is win or go home.
Each episode, our contestants will face new challenges that will test their strength and lack of life skills for a chance to win $200
million.
$200,000.
Prepare, because it's about to be ugly, crying, lots of fighting.
Tayshia, I have to defend myself.
Celebrating 25 years of reality TV with your favorites.
I have diarrhea. You cannot do this to me.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT, premiering on Freevee and Prime Video on May 9th.